Hello and welcome to the Field Music Cast, where we, David Brewis and
me, Peter Brewis,
of the band Field Music, talk about one of our songs and use that as an excuse to talk about some other songs that we like and are influenced by. And we're still dealing with our still new album, Flat White Moon. We've done 6 episodes so far. This is going to be episode 7. And we are going to talk about the song The Curtained Room.
Yep, so this is like the second last song on the album. Have I got the track listing right?
Yes, this is like the real end of the album before we do the coda, if you get better, which we've already done in a previous episode. Check it out on your, I don't know, internet.
Check it out on your internet. We'll start off with, I think... what I was trying to do at the very beginning, I had a chord progression and I was trying to write something in a minor key.
Which is a bit unusual for us, relatively.
It is, because it kind of says to other people, not to us, that minor keys are sad. Sad in a kind of, like unhappy, not like kind of sad. This is sad. Although there is that element to it as well. It's like, you're in a minor key, that's sad. Anyway.
Other people, you know, I'm sure have a great time writing songs in minor keys, it's just that we don't often do it.
No, and it's something I'm kind of trying
it's
to do.
The next big step for us.
Yeah. I've learned all the minor chords. Well, I've learned one, A minor, which that's the key that this song's in. So, had a little A minor chord progression, which actually... we're not going to play this song, but it's one of those descending chord progressions that I think's kind of taken from that Histoire de Melody Nelson sort of album, where you descend from a minor chord into a major chord. You know what I'm talking about.
I think I do know what
Jean-Claude
you're talking about,
Vanier, yes. Did it on Histoire de Melody Nelson with Serge Gainsbourg.
And it makes you feel like you keep changing key as you go. As you descend through the chords.
Anyway, that's just one chord progression through the entire song, this. Which may be, I don't know, offensive to some people out there in the internet. But I've done it. It's too late. I've done it.
It's out there.
We did it. We did it. And it's too late. And then I thought about another song that did it, that I wanted to kind of model something else on, which was Beyond Belief by Elvis Costello. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's really.
Like a brooding masterpiece.
Really weird. I mean, I think it shows that most of the Elvis Costello stuff I know well is earlier, but I find it quite interesting to hear him singing so quietly.
So soft and quiet, soft and low.
And up to the microphone, and it's got that kind of like bassy proximity effect type football sound. And the drums are all over the place in a good way, like not putting the accents where you would necessarily think of doing them. And I feel like maybe not for that reason, but there's a similar thing going on with the drum machine bits going on in Curtain Room, where there's different percussive sounds which put emphasis in places where you might not expect them, if in your mind drums must go boom, ga, boom, boom, ga, which is, for me,
it's a good beat.
Bass setting.
Write that one down.
Well, I've already used that one too many times.
But yeah, so I suppose I was, you know, thinking about the very beginning of that song and thinking, oh yeah, it's like kind of like hi-hats. And I thought, well, I can't just do it the same. And maybe I think that the melody's probably a little bit taken from that idea as well.
And this is one of the songs that I associate with being written right in the depths of lockdown, where we were actually not coming at the studio at all.
No, I wasn't coming at the studio at all. So all of the drums on that are basically they're just samples of possibly our drum kit, or maybe I used a, oh no, it's not. It's like a sample of a CR88, that the Roland CompuRhythm.
78,
that's it, yeah. And I think that's, you know, that kind of Hall & Oates sort of, but yeah, I thought to myself, I didn't want it to be just like all like that sounds like a live band, you know.
Yeah, really.
The Elvis Costello track there sounds like a really live band. I mean, just absolutely brilliant. And I thought, well, I can't do that. And then if I did try and do that, it would be just too much the same, really. So yeah, it ended up just being a kind of, and then I think I thought, oh, what would Prince do? And I thought, yeah, he'll just use a load of different drum. Well, he probably would have used like a Lindrum machine, really.
And to sort of bring different elements of it come in and out. Yeah. I'm sure I'd read that when Prince used his Lin machine, he would have three outputs from the machine. One for the bass drum, one for the snare drum, and one for everything else, which he would put through all of his effects pedals. All of his guitar effects pedals.
Even his wah-wah?
Maybe. You might not have had them all turned on, though.
Oh, right, yeah. Like, wow. Cool.
Every single Prince song has every single effect on, like, just the hi-hat and the shaker.
Well, I don't know whether you've noticed this. That's what I actually do when I play guitar for field music. I just turn on all the effects pedals.
I know, because when we switch around, it's like,
It's like, Peter, we've used all of these.
It's like, all the red lights are on. It's like, oh, God, there's that rotary speaker effect again. Yeah. Quickly turn everything off before we start the song. It's sometimes nice surprise, sometimes less so. He would just have different elements come in and out, and Prince is like totally brilliant at programming that drum machine to give it life. And I know that sometimes he would overdub a live snare drum over it, or
when you see it live and you see what was the drummer called again in the classic lineup.
Bobby Z.
So he'd be playing along with the Lynn drum machine, but just
standing up, playing
cymbals.
Lashing the cymbals, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
During like 1999, it'd be sort of...
It works well. I like it. We should... When are we going to do something a bit like that for this song when we play it live?
We could do that.
When we play live. When live music happens again for us.
Oh, let's keep that in mind for... how we could do it live.
Right.
Okay. Right. Watch this space. The other thing, I suppose what I was trying to go for lyrically, it was kind of like, it was meant to be a story about me going clothes shopping with my mom. Also known as our mom.
Yes. So the curtained room.
Is the changing room. Right. And I'd have, you know, we'd have to wait outside. For some reason, it seemed like I was on my own. So I don't know. I'm thinking of very specifically sort of a time that I went, maybe it was only once, but it seemed to last for ages. So we went in every single clothes shop. I think my mum was looking for a leather jacket. There you go. You know, does anyone else's mums wear like a leather biker's jacket? She wasn't even a biker.
I remember the jacket though. I remember the jacket. It was a good one.
Or maybe it wasn't that time. Maybe there were more times. But anyway, so, you know, you ended up in kind of lots waiting outside for my mum and a lot of clothes shops waiting for her to come out and say, oh, what do you think? What do you think of this leather jacket? Mum, I'm only 8.
I don't care.
But 8 rocks. Can we go home now? So yeah, that was the scene. And then it wasn't until after, like later, I thought, because I think I'd been listening to a lot of like Paul Simon and trying to make my lyrics better by listening to Paul Simon.
That sounds like as good a way of doing it as anything.
Hoping that some of his, ingenuity will just kind of like descend.
Yeah, because he writes
me.
Like, you know, brilliant individual turns of phrase. And he writes songs that like guide you through something, and they're funny and poignant, and they've got all of those things that you might want lyrics to do.
Yeah, well, yeah. But then again, you know, there's other types of lyrics which also work, which are like crap lyrics. They also work, you know, or they do a job, you know. It's like,
this is where we're going to get in the discussion again about whether rock music
should have good lyrics
or not. We'll just leave it in the air.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
make your own mind up. Think about it. Think about it every day, like I do.
Yeah. Some days I don't think about it, and that's when I possibly write my worst lyrics.
So Paul Simon.
So it wasn't till after, you know, I'd been listening to, obviously, you've been listening to Graceland a lot, and I think what I was trying to do with this song was do, in hindsight, a kind of a reverse Graceland. So obviously Graceland, the song, starts off with Paul Simon going on a road trip. This is in my mind, I might be getting this wrong, with his son. And for some reason, he decides to go to Graceland. And that's what it's all about. But obviously for this song, The Curtained Room.
This is you going.
My mum is Paul Simon, and she's hoping she's going to be received in CNA.
Yeah.
Not Graceland. But she's going to find what she's looking for in Clockhouse in CNA. And I'm the little boy. You know, and imagine what Paul Simon's son must have felt like going to Graceland. He's like, Dad, we're going to Elvis's. Why?
I mean, well, if it's if it's Harper Simon, maybe we can listen to his records and see if he's written a song.
Oh, well, actually, yeah, oh, yeah, I never thought about it, of course. Oh, well, there you go. Oh, there you go.
There's a bit of research for everyone to do.
Do your own research. Hashtag.
We'd make the laziest academics going, Peter.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, this was kind of an attempt at a reverse Graceland. And what a song that is. Just the whole thing's just amazing.
Marvellous. And still unique.
It's one of those rhythms as well that it's like, I don't think we've really done that rhythm yet. It's too jaunty, I think, for us, but it shouldn't be too jaunty for us.
We'll have to find a way.
Okay.
On the next record.
A little bit more fretless bass as well, I think.
More fretless bass.
Well, from us, not from Paul and the band. I think that's quite enough.
I feel like we already do quite a lot of fretless bass, but I suppose we can always work in more, because it only tends to be like two or three songs an album.
It's kind of, I can never tell whether it's so out of fashion that it's back in fashion, or it's so out of fashion that it's still just like totally out of fashion, or whether it's acceptable or whether it's not acceptable. I mean, it doesn't make any difference to whether we use it or not, I don't think. I just wonder, you know, and I mean, we shouldn't worry about being fashionable or unfashionable.
I feel like fretless bass is on the cusp of being socially acceptable. I feel like slap bass is not at the stage of being...
Do we need to bring it back?
...socially acceptable. I'm not sure we're the ones to do that.
Well, I can't play bass anyway.
You've played a lot of bass in this album. Played bass in this song.
Yeah, I suppose I did.
And on a few tracks.
I wouldn't say I played it. I had it in the room and I just did some stuff on it. I think bass is the worst instruments that I own. Oh no, I own a trumpet as well. Yeah, anyway, the less said about that, the better. Guitar-wise, though, I think the thing that I was trying to do, because I had my old blue Strat, and whenever I pick up the blue Strat,
the very Stratty sounding Strat.
The very Stratty, Stratty Strat, I pick it up and I think, tonight, Matthew, I'm going to be Richard Thompson. And then I start playing and I realise I'm not. I'm never going to be Richard Thompson. There's only one RT. Oh, no, there's two. There's another Richard Thompson. We know another Richard Thompson, don't we?
We do. He plays guitar in a very, very different style.
Does. Not Stratty.
Definitely not Stratty. No, he's
Sunderland, one of Sunderland's, maybe Sunderland's finest heavy rock guitarist, Richard Thompson.
From the band Ashes of Iron.
Yeah. And Hide and Beast.
Yeah, I think of him as a humbucker guy and not a Strat guy.
Well, Richard, the next time you pass me on the street in your car...
The next time we see him driving his post office van...
Either shout out, humbucker, or single coils. Don't give me any of this P90 nonsense. One or the other. Anyway, so with the Strattiness on this song, I was thinking... Come on, let's try a bit of Richard Thompson-ness. And one of his strattiest songs, I think, one of my favourite ones, is Shoot Out the Lights. Now, that's some guitar playing.
Incredible.
Magical.
And, like, such a distinct voice. Such a distinct sound on that instrument.
I mean, I love to hear, because that's Dave Mattox on the drums as well, and I love to hear them two play together. It's just like dynamite.
Yeah, we were listening to a live album of theirs.
Yeah, we've got a couple of live bits and bobs of them two playing together. We've got this kind of BBC, odd BBC session from around about the same time as Shoot Out the Lights. And I think it's called A Little Night Music.
Okay.
And I would thoroughly recommend people checking that out. It's heavy.
Yeah.
It's heavy. In a certain sense of the word, it's heavy. Not, and then we have that.
Not humbucker heavy.
Not humbucker heavy, just kind of like single coil, small drums heavy. You know, like kind of the other sort of side of Led Zeppelin, two Led Zeppelin, you know, Led Zeppelin are kind of like big drums, humbuckers, heavy. This is different. And then there is that live at the Rock Blast.
Yeah.
Now, Dave Mannix has told me that he doesn't like the mix of the drums on that.
What does Dave Mannix know?
He says the bass drum, the bass drum is too heavy. The bass drum is too heavy. But you know what? I love it.
I mean, it's very, very dynamic.
It is very dynamic. Really dynamic.
And it feels like, I don't know, I kind of like, you kind of want live music to sound like it's on the edge of falling off a cliff.
Oh.
And
yeah.
You're going to be brought down with it.
Yeah. You might not get alive.
And that seems to be like Richard Thompson live at his best. Does that to you? Certainly, because you saw him play. Did you see him play at the Sage?
Yeah. Yeah, it was wild. Yeah. I mean, he started a song and the first song and stopped it straight away. Stopped it. They didn't get it right. And then just started again. And didn't bat an eyelid. That's how it is.
That's
rock. It's rock music. But it was wild, yeah. It was really, his guitar playing was really wild. But I think it might have been you that pointed out to me, oh, you know what this song sounds like? Was it you that pointed this out?
Of The Curtained Room?
Yeah.
It may have been. Were we going to talk about Robert Palmer now?
We were going to talk about Robert Palmer, yeah.
So when you first showed me the first demo, I mean, it's got a little bit of the kind of Stratty Dire Straits thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, like, that I think has, you know, crept into what we do over the last couple of years, especially since
Dire Straits creeping in, learning
to play Romeo and Juliet, for a different gig. But the other thing which it reminded me of is Johnny and Mary by Robert Palmer, which. It's one of those songs I think I knew in my head, and maybe you only knew from the Renault Clio advert, possibly, because it came out before I would have noticed it. And our mum had a few Robert Palmer records, but they were all later than this, because Johnny and Mary, I think, is like 1980.
Yeah, what's that album it's on? It's called...
Clues.
Clues.
Looking for Clues.
Looking for Clues.
The song,
or is the song?
I don't know which way around it is. But I'd heard that song, Looking for Clues, or Clues, or whatever it's called. It must have been on some Top of the Pops thing. And loved that in its, like, daft new waveness. And got the album with it on. And then was reminded of Johnny and Mary. Which again, like we were talking about Elvis Costello singing lower, softer in his range. Because we'd grown up with the like ultimate sexy guy crooner.
Simply Irresistible.
Hearing Robert Palmer sing low and soft in his range was a bit of a surprise to me. And I was like, why do I know this melody? Ah, Papa, Nicole. But I feel like it's a totally brilliant song, but it's got that kind of like steady, light skittering, which I hear in The Curtained Room.
Yeah, I can hear that. And I think because it's also kind of, let's have a listen anyway. Johnny and Mary's kind of, again, sort of quite verse, isn't it? So yeah, pretty much... Verse on verse on verse.
Yeah. very minimal. In my mind, it's like, oh, yes, Johnny Mary, that's one of his songs with a drum machine. And it's not. It's actually a drummer. It's a funny album, and I think he's a funny artist and probably in some ways quite underrated because I think he just totally went with his whims of what he was interested in at the time. So, you know, in the 70s, he did an album with Little Feat as his backing band. He did an album...
Which one's that?
Sneaking Sally Down the Alley.
Oh, right. Okay, that's got Little Feat on.
I think
okay.
So, yeah. And he made an album in Jamaica, I think. And then he made this, where Gary Newman's actually on a couple of the songs on this album.
And Chris Franz from Talking Heads is on.
I think
on Clues or looking for Clues.
And then he did The Power Station.
Where he invented a new kind of music with the other guys.
But then when they couldn't get together to do another Power Station album, he just took that sound and became the MTV friendly Robert Palmer we all know now.
My mum did have a best of, which we never really listened to, but I've now stolen. And on the liner notes, he kind of explains his like motivation.
Oh, really?
Behind the songs. Not in a pretentious way, like I've just made it out like I say. Where's my motivation for this? But he seemed like very sort of into what he was doing. Yeah, like a fan of music, and he knew kind of what he was doing, and followed, followed his whims, really, I suppose.
And I'm into that as a musical approach,
mm-hmm.
rather than just. I'm into that as a musical approach to justify what we've been doing all of these years. But in a way, I mean, like, you know, we've done it in such a way as, like, you know, everything that comes out the end still kind of sounds like field music. And I think Robert Palmer was even more just like, this song's going to be like blues rock. Doctor, give me the news.
Good one. It's a good one.
I really like Gary Newman. I'm going to get Gary Newman to play on my album, and I'm going to cover a Gary Newman song on my album, even though people think of me as like this soul guy.
yeah.
And just totally go for it. And if you can end that journey with different variations on Simply Irresistible, then so be it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we should say what we normally say at the end of a field music song. And we stole this from the Rhythm Bandits. Remember when we used to go and see them? Thank you very much indeed, ladies and gentlemen.